mundane details of his life, is bristling with anger at some imputed racist incident. Colder analyzes a passage in which Obama describes a black party that Ray threw at Schofield Barracks, about 30 miles out of town, on a Saturday night after a basketball game. Obama used his father's Ford Granada to drive two white friends to the party, Jeff and Scott. Everything was fine until Obama noticed Jeff and Scott were smiling a lot, isolated by themselves, huddled in a corner. Obama concluded Jeff and Scott were uncomfortable being the only whites. So he excused himself to Ray and headed out, his two white friends with him. Once back in the car, Jeff put an arm on Obama's shoulder and said what Obama took as a racial insult. "You know, man, that was really something. I mean, I can see how tough for you and Ray sometimes at school, parties, being the only black guys and all." Those words spark one of the longest paragraphs in the autobiography, what Colter describes as a full-page psychotic rant about living by the white man's rules. Obama loses his composure, beginning the tirade by admitting, "A part of me wanted to punch him right there." "We're always playing on the white man's court," Ray had told me, "by the white man's rules." The essence of the rant is the white man had all the power, such that if a coach or teacher came to Obama's defense, Obama felt it was his decision to make, not yours. Because of that fundamental power he held over you, because it preceded and would outlast his individual motives and inclinations, any distinction between good and bad, whites had negligible meaning. The only option was to withdraw into a smaller and smaller coil of rage, until being black meant only the knowledge of your own powerlessness, of your own defeat. Obama concluded by charging that this logic had a final irony. Should you refuse this defeat and lash out at your captors, they would have a name for that too, a name that could cage you just as good: paranoid, militant, violent, nigger. How severe was the racial injustice Obama truly suffered in this incident? Remember, he was attending one of the most elite educational institutions in Hawaii. So where does Obama's racial angst come from? Obama is not a descendant of a slave. He did not grow up in an urban ghetto to an impoverished family. He was not unjustly prosecuted for some crime he did not commit. Where is the social injustice he has suffered? Perhaps Kakugawa is right. What Obama had experienced to this point in his life was not intense racial injustice, but the abandonment of his father, followed by the abandonment of his mother. His white Midwestern grandparents loved him enough to provide him room and board in their home, modest as it may have been, and to pay a tuition his mother most likely could not afford, and which his father showed no interest in paying, even if he had the means. Yes, Obama was mixed race, but what had he suffered from being born to an African father of a white mother? Beyond the confused identity, Obama never suffered poverty, and he ended up the Harvard-educated son of a Harvard-educated father. Is it possible that Obama invents Ray in his autobiography just to tell stories of black rage? In 1995, Obama did not seek to find his high school friend, to find out how he was doing, and to ask permission to tell their story. From all accounts, Obama was taken back when he received Kakagawa's phone call in 2007. Instead of reaching out to offer his friend personal assistance, Obama referred him to his staff and instructed them to tell Kakagawa to find help at a social services agency. Where's the empathy for the past friendship of a classmate whose story Obama wove into his legacy? Could the stories we find in dreams from my father have been borrowed, if not directly, then indirectly? In Dreams from My Father, Obama himself provides us abundant evidence to conclude that his ideas of racial rage came from reading. Obama tells us that at Punahou, he gathered up books from the library, Baldwin, Ellison, Hughes, Wright, Dubois. At night, he would close the door to my room, telling my grandparents I had homework to do. And there I would sit and wrestle with words, locked in suddenly desperate argument, trying to reconcile the world as I found it, with the terms of my birth. But there was no escape to be found, Obama confessed. In every page of every book, in Bigger Thomas and Invisible Men, I kept finding the same doubt, a self-contempt that neither irony nor intellect seemed to deflect. Obama's search for identity had become a search for the racial overtones of the parental abandonment from which he'd suffered. Obama's black rage came from the books he read, a borrowed intellectual pattern he could place on his life. Many of the black rage paragraphs Obama wrote in Dreams from My Father bear a striking resemblance to passages Frantz Fanon wrote in his first book, Black Skin, White Masks, first published in 1952. For instance, Obama has a whole section parsing out the meaning of the phrase white folks. He ends up noting, "Ray assured me that we would never talk about whites without knowing exactly what we were doing, without knowing there might be